Hello and welcome into the Heat Check Sim Show with your host, The Real Sim Shady. I'm excited to be back. The last episode we dropped was, you know, just over a week ago, and it was that season three preview episode with Fake Gilinardi. And I just want to thank everyone for, you know, listening and supporting that episode. We had over 140 listens, which has been by far the most listened to episode of the podcast so far. So it's been encouraging to see, you know, the increase in support and listenership. And I just want to thank you all for that. And I hope you, you know, continue to listen and continue to provide feedback and things that you want to hear about and, you know, continue to reach out if you're interested in coming on the show. Today, I'm excited to bring you a quick rundown on recruiting tips for any of the newer Heat Check Sim coaches. Again, these tips might be a little late for this year just because we're in the middle of recruiting cycle two. But if you listen to this today, you might be able to use some of these tips for this cycle, and then hopefully you'll be able to use them for cycle three if you're new to the recruiting cycle process. So yeah, I'm looking forward to bringing you those. Most of you will probably be aware of kind of these tips, and there's nothing, you know, groundbreaking that I'm going to provide, but I have seen different people, you know, bring things up with questions and stuff on the Discord channel. So I just wanted to spend some time covering, you know, those tips. And again, if there's anything else you guys hear that you want to, that you think is a good ad or anything like that, feel free to let me know, and I can mention that in future episodes as well. In addition to that, I'm also excited to share my interview conversation with Posh Jastner, the head coach of Heat Check Georgia Tech. You know, he has a program that's been on the rise, so I'm excited to share the conversation I had with Posh, and I hope you guys enjoy that as well. Before I get into my interview conversation with Posh Jastner that I think you all will enjoy, I wanted to provide some recruiting tips, primarily for new coaches or anyone who's unaware of these tips. I think most of these tips are going to be common knowledge for everyone, but if you're a new coach, you might be able to learn something from listening to this. And even if you're not new, maybe there'll be a small thing in here that you weren't aware of, or something that you hadn't considered since the season started. So, like I said, the focus of this conversation, I'm going to be primarily speaking to new coaches. Generally, those coaches are at really low prestige level schools. So the main goal of this conversation is just to provide tips for landing commitments from recruits. So I'm not going to be concerned with, you know, giving them advice at this point on, you know, scheduling or developing the talent on your roster. This is just primarily what is the best way to land land commitments from recruits. So again, that's the primary focus. I'm not saying this is the best way to run your program on a season by season basis, but if you just need to turn out talent, you need new talent on your roster, this is the way to recruit and set yourself up best to land the top talent that you can. So just some more like background. I mean, everyone's aware of this, but I just want to mention it to start it out. You know, recruiting is crucial for roster building because you want to fill your roster with recruits and transfers so that you don't have empty roster spots after that transfer cycle. Because at that point, you will have players automatically added to your team by the sim. And more than likely, they will not be players that you want to have on your team, and they will drag your overall team rating down. So basically, like I said, you want to make sure that once the transfer period at the end of the season is over, you don't have any remaining roster spots that the simulation needs to fill on its own. As a reminder, the way that those leftover spots in your roster are filled out is that they take the list of the remaining players, the remaining recruits who haven't landed on a team after recruiting and after transfers, and they assign the best players to the best team based on strength of record from the previous season. So they assign the best players to the best team based on what they need, and they go down the list. So if you're a prestige one school that had a really good year, but you just had an empty roster spot at the end, you could get one of the best players that's remaining after the recruiting and transfers. That's more than likely isn't really going to help you anyway. He's not going to be a really good player because all the really good recruits are going to stick on rosters, and same for the transfers. So this is not a position you want to be in. if you're a really good team, but especially if you're a really bad team, because you're gonna get the players that are really bottom of the barrel, the players that nobody wants on their rosters. So again, these tips are to help you avoid that scenario of having empty roster spots going into that transfers or after the transfer cycle. Another point I wanted to mention before the tips, just to clarify and just to make this explicitly clear for anyone who's unaware, your team's success or lack thereof within the sim in season one or season two has nothing to do with recruiting results to this point in the sim. So basically any success that you've had in season one and season two, even in season three, none of that matters when it comes to recruiting. The players that you're recruiting aren't going to be aware of how well your team's done. They're not going to be aware if you had a Sweet 16 run. They're not going to be aware if you won the NIT. They're not going to be aware if you had a winless season. So just winning alone is not going to help you recruit to this point in the simulation. I will say Eli has made the adjustment to the sim where now we do have the ability to jump up prestige levels if you have a prolonged amount of success. So if you have success over whatever the number of seasons is, you have success over a handful of seasons, and it exceeds what a team at your prestige level normally would, then there's a chance you could jump up in prestige levels. So at that point, jumping a prestige level, jumping from 5 to 4, that would help recruiting because 4s have a stronger prestige and therefore they're more attractive to recruits. So in that way, yeah, having success will help you in the recruiting trails down the road. But to this point in the sim, none of the previous success you've had is going to help you land recruits. Like I said, they're not going to be aware of your success. They're not going to be aware of your failures. So don't bank on that. Don't bank on a good run you had in the NCAA tournament and assume that that'll help you recruit because it just won't. So now let's get into how you can best approach recruiting. So the first thing that goes into recruiting is setting your off-season budget sliders when you get the off-season budget form. So if you're a new coach in season three, I believe you were added after the off-season budget sliders form was released and after it was submitted. So I don't think – I could be wrong about that, but I don't think this is something that you were – as a new coach were able to submit for season three. So this will be something to look out for during the off-season cycles once March Madness for season three concludes. So within this off-season budget form – there are three different sliders you need to focus on as it relates to recruiting. The first one is the recruiting versus development slider. What this slider is basically just allows you to choose whether you want to focus on recruiting new talent or developing the talent that's currently on your roster as quickly as you can. So when you have the choice on this slider, if you need to recruit, I would focus entirely on recruiting. I would disregard development and focus entirely on recruiting. That's what a lot of teams will be doing. So if you try to play it in the middle, you're not going to have as much success recruiting. So you need to focus entirely on recruiting on this slider if you need to land a significant amount of new talent. The next slider is whether you want to focus. It's focusing on the type of talent you want to bring into your program. So it's asking, do you want to focus on high schoolers and JUCO players, or do you want to focus on landing transfers? For the purposes of the sim, a JUCO player is not considered a transfer. And so what I mean by that is high schoolers and JUCOs fall into the same bucket where they are new players that are being added to the simulation, whereas that you can recruit during recruiting cycles. Whereas a transfer is a player that is coming from another school within the simulation. So again, the transfers you'll recruit at the end of the season in that transfer cycle, high schoolers and JUCO players you recruit during the recruiting cycles that happen during the season. So if you're focusing on, if you want to land new recruits, if you want to land high schoolers and JUCO talent, you need to focus this slider entirely on the high schoolers and JUCO side versus the transfer side. You don't want to be focused on the transfer side if you need, young talent. And then the third slider during the offseason budget form that you need to be aware of as it relates to recruiting is the integrity sliders, which is, whether you want to play You want to run a clean program, or you want to do whatever it takes to land recruits, or that dirty program mentality. So, you know, if you want to land recruits, the best way to do it is to play dirty. You want to take that do whatever it takes mentality to landing recruits. There are some drawbacks to this. There are some consequences, potential consequences for this approach. But just in terms of, you know, landing as many good recruits as you can, you want to focus on playing with low integrity. I'll just mention the consequences to make sure everyone's aware. But if you do get caught playing dirty, you get caught by the NCAA for, you know, doing things that you shouldn't be doing to land recruits because you chose that dirty slider. If you get caught, you'll get a postseason ban in that season. So if you selected to have low integrity in season three and you get caught, you will be ineligible for the postseason in season three. That includes your conference tournament, and that includes, you know, March Madness or NIT. So that's the first consequence. The other consequence is newer, Eli described that with his new financial system that helps him determine whether teams should jump prestige levels or not. Getting caught by the NCAA, getting that postseason ban, it hurts your chances to jump prestige levels. So if, you know, jumping prestige levels is one of your ultimate goals, I don't know that you want to play dirty, but just as far as, you know, landing recruits is concerned, that's the most likely. If you do that, you'll be more likely to land them is if you play with low integrity. So those are the three offseason budget sliders. Again, you want to focus on recruiting more than development. You want to focus on high schoolers and JUCO talent versus transfers. And you want to focus on playing with low integrity versus high integrity in terms of, you know, those are the three offseason budget sliders. Moving into the actual tips for recruiting during the recruiting cycles. So everyone plays this a little differently, I think, but, you know, I'll run you through kind of how I do this and how I think other people probably do this. You know, the crystal ball obviously has changed the approach. It's added a ton of strategy to recruiting, and I think it's made it a heck of a lot better. It allows everyone to kind of have an idea of the players they're going to be able to land and things like that. So that's been huge. But so just in terms of how I typically run through the process of recruiting each cycle, once the list of players that I'm able to offer comes out, I will take that list and I'll shorten it to make a list of just the players that I am interested in landing. And so I'll look at things like their overall rating. I'll look at if they're a position of need. I'll look at their loyalty and development ratings, and I'll determine the players that I want to have on my roster. If you are not subscribed to the Heat Check CBB site, you will not have access to the loyalty and development ratings. But if you are subscribed, you can go in and find the loyalty and development ratings for all the recruits so that you won't be surprised when you land those players on your roster. So again, I would recommend doing that because it really does help with planning your roster for the future. It really does help with, you know, playing for just more than just the season right ahead. It helps you plan for two or three or four seasons. So again, it's not a huge advantage where if you don't do it, you have no chance of competing, but it is an advantage. So if you want to have long-term success in the simulation, I would recommend being a subscriber for heatcheckcbb.com, getting access to those loyalty and development ratings to help you recruit as best you can the players that fit your team. So first I make that list of players that I want to have on my team, and then I prioritize them. So I'll list them, you know, from first to whatever it is, maybe it's 10 players, 15 players, first to 10, the players that I want. So likely it'll be the players with the highest overalls are the ones I'm most interested in. But, you know, positions of need also does come into play. If you really need a shooting guard, you may not be as focused on that point guard who's the best player you have the ability to offer and things like that. So I would prioritize the players that you are interested in landing. Another thing to keep in mind, this is another tip. Offering fewer players gives you a better chance to land recruits. So if you have 10 players on that list of players that you're interested in landing and you offer all 10 of them in one cycle, you're most likely not going to get any of them just because you aren't able to allocate much time to getting to know that player and things like that. So if you offer one of those players, you'll have a better chance of landing that player because you allocated all this time to him and you really built a relationship with that player and he's really gung-ho about playing for you and your team. So that, now you might ask, well, if offering fewer players gives you a better chance to land recruits, why did you make that list? Like, why did I make that list of 10 players that I prioritize for each cycle? Well, the reason is because you have to keep tabs on the crystal ball. That's the next tip. So if I just offer the best player and then, you know, submitted my cycle and I didn't do anything else the rest of the weekend related to recruiting, and then I check in after the cycle's over and I didn't get that recruit, I'm going to be really disappointed. You know, I did everything I could to land him. I only focused on him. I had all my sliders set right and I didn't land him. But if you keep tabs on the crystal ball, you would know that maybe Saturday someone came in with an offer that was better than yours. And so you may have offered that player that was top of your list, but somebody else has a better offer. They might be in a better prestige level than you, or whatever the case is, they have a better offer for that player and you're not going to get him. So at that point, you can adjust and you can go down to that second recruit on your list and you can offer him. Again, you want to offer these players one or two at a time for the best chances to land them. So what that means is you have to go in and resubmit your form. The last form that you submit is the only one that counts toward the simulation. So if you submit 50 forms and you have all these different offers in all of them, none of those matter if you offer or if you submit a 51st form right at the end of the cycle on Sunday night. The 51st one you submit is the only one that'll count towards the simulation. It's the only one that'll register. So what that means is you can go back in and resubmit your form as many times as you want. And so you can make those adjustments. If someone takes the lead on a player that you wanted, you can adjust and go down to the next best player on down the line. Just a quick thing about submitting a new form. Once you submit a form, it'll give you two options. It'll say you can submit another response or you can edit response. I always choose submit another response. Because in season two, there were some issues at first with the edit response option where after you would click edit response and you'd resubmit your form, it wouldn't carry your new responses into the simulation. So I don't know for sure if that has been resolved. And so I've just been going with that submit another response option to just go back in, make my new offers, resubmit my form, and then continue with that process. I bet that the edit response option has been fixed, but I know I had issues with that in season two. I think others did too. So I've just been going with the submit another response option there. So another thing to keep in mind when you're keeping tabs on the crystal ball as part of this tip is that just because you are behind a school on one player doesn't mean that you will necessarily be behind that school on another player. So what I mean by that is in season two, when I was recruiting and I was looking at the crystal ball, a team that I was really battling with was Radford. And so Radford on one of the players I was interested in, the top player I was interested in, I offered him and Radford had the best offer and I couldn't beat their offer. So they were going to land him. And so basically at that point, I didn't have as much knowledge of the sim. And so I thought any player that I see Radford have the lead on over the recruiting cycles for that season, I wasn't going to be able to land. I wasn't going to be able to match their offer. And so I just avoided those players altogether. So that is not the case. So basically what I'm saying is don't approach it the way I did where I avoided those players. Just because you are behind Radford on one player doesn't mean you could be behind him on all of them. And And the reason for that is there are multiple things that go into it, like positions of need for different teams. And so what I mean by that is if that player that Radford and I are both recruiting is a shooting guard, and Radford has a specific need at shooting guard, meaning they don't have any players on their roster for the next season that plays that position, they're going to be more likely to land him if I don't have that same position of need. But if I have a position of need for a point guard and we both offer the same point guard, I might be more likely to land him. I kind of view that as a tiebreaker, whereas if we're both coming in with good offers, the team with the position of need will be more likely to land him. I think it's a pretty significant weight for these recruits because, I mean, if you think about it, it makes sense. In real life, a lot of times recruits want to go play where they know they're going to have a chance to play right away and things like that. So if you have a specific position of need, you need to fill a roster spot, you're going to be more likely to land those players. So just because I was behind Radford on a shooting guard doesn't mean I couldn't beat them out on a point guard. The other thing that goes into this was something that I learned talking to Eli on a previous podcast episode, which was that players do have preferences on their end that we can't see. It's kind of behind the curtain, if you will. So they have players have preferences as it relates to academics and facilities. Like I said, Eli talked about this a little bit on his podcast appearance on my show. And basically what that means is one player that Radford and I are both recruiting might prefer to have, you know, stronger academics. Another player might prefer to have stronger facilities. And depending on how that plays in with our schools, I might be more likely to land one player versus another that we're both offering. So just because I'm behind Radford in one player, doesn't mean to avoid any player that Radford has the lead on. I just want to make that clear because that's something that I learned at the end of season two going into season three. So basically, yeah, if you're keeping tabs on that crystal ball, you can kind of just keep readjusting your offers until you find a player that you have the lead on a crystal ball that you can kind of settle at. And then the last tip related to that is just to make sure that you continue to keep tabs throughout the weekend, because just because you have a lead on that player on Friday night doesn't mean that someone can't come in with a better offer on Sunday afternoon. So you need to check in periodically to make sure that you still have the best offer for that player, that you're still in the lead. Because the other thing I need to mention is that if you are in the lead at the end of the recruiting cycle at midnight Eastern time when the recruiting cycle leads or ends, you will have that player on your or you will land that commitment from that player. So it's crucially important that you are in the lead, because if you're not, you need to readjust your strategy because you're not going to land that player. So I would keep making those adjustments to your offers. I would keep tabs on the crystal ball, make sure you're still leading throughout the weekend, that'll give you the best opportunity to land these recruits. Again, none of the advice that I shared was, you know, groundbreaking. It's all going to be stuff that the vast majority of you are going to be aware of. It's nothing like new for like I said, the vast majority of you, but hopefully this will be helpful to new coaches, and hopefully new coaches in the future can refer to this episode for advice on how to recruit. I wouldn't anticipate any big changes coming from the, you know, Eli's side in terms of recruiting. We got the crystal ball. I think that'll be the biggest change that we'll see for a while. So hopefully this episode will continue to be relevant and new coaches can continue to use this for recruiting tips on how to approach the crystal ball and things like that going into the future. So basically that wraps up my recruiting tips spiel, I guess. If there was anything you heard that you need further clarification on, or if there's any ideas you have or that you use that you don't mind sharing, please, you know, feel free to reach out and let me know if you have any questions, comments, anything like that. I'm happy to clarify anything if needed on Twitter or on Discord. So again, just reach out and we can, you know, further discuss any different recruiting strategies that you might be curious about. As a quick introduction for my guest, Posh Jastner is the head coach of Heat Check Georgia Tech. He's been a staple of the Heat Check community, both on the Twitter and Discord platforms, and I'm excited to have him on and get all the inside info on the goings-on within the Heat Check Georgia Tech program. You can find him on Twitter at SimposhJasner. That's SimposhJasner. If you're looking for a good follow on Twitter within the Heat Check Sim universe, he is your guy. He's wildly entertaining on that platform within Discord. I'm looking forward to sharing this interview with you, so let's get into it. I'm excited to welcome a fake coach to this real show about a fake basketball season, Posh Jasner of Heat Check Georgia Tech. How's it going, Posh?
It's going very well. A little bit of a rainy Saturday morning, but I'm happy to be on the show, and I'm happy to have you, or happy to be here. And glad you have me.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, I'm excited to kind of catch up with you, get all the inside intel on what's going on with Georgia Tech. I know, you know, this has been a season that you have higher expectations than you've had in the previous two. So I'm excited to learn a little bit about how you've developed your program and things like that. So let's just get into it. I'm just curious about, you know, how you got here. So give us some background on your experience with your Heat Check team, with Georgia Tech. Tell me about how your teams did in season one and season two. You know, if you know your strength of rosters, significant results, best players, anything you want to mention that you think is relevant, feel free to, you know, kind of give us some background on Heat Check Georgia Tech.
Yeah, it was kind of a rebuilding process, I would say, from the get-go. I think Eli has done a tremendous job as far as making the sim sort of realistic as far as where programs currently stand. And, you know, when I was able to kind of get in early because, you know, Eli and I have a friendly kind of relationship, and I got, you know, got the team that I wanted, and, you know, the roster was, let's say, undesirable, I guess, at first. You know, strength of roster, I believe, in season one for me was around 130, 140. And, you know, it took, you know, like everything in life, I guess, it's kind of a trial and error. You know, I kind of, I think for that first season I did, you know, we kind of balanced out as far as development, recruiting, I think, is the slider on that. I think I may have gone for some JUCO guys in that first season, which is where I landed the point guard that I currently have in Jack Arnett, who's not really an ACC level type player. And so, you know, through trial and error, through becoming more familiar with the sim, you know, we get to adjust our philosophies a little bit prior to each season. And, you know, I've kind of adjusted that accordingly. And, you know, it showed, you know, massive results as far as my recruiting class went in season two, where I was able to bring in one of the better classes in the nation. I've still got some guys on my roster that I'm not going to say I wish weren't there because, you know, even though it's a fake simulation, you hate to be that guy because you know, we all kind of bang on the real coaches for doing stuff like that. But it's all about just kind of adapting to the sim and how the sim can, you know, kind of make it work for you. And I've been able to start building a roster that hopefully puts me, you know, in the tournament. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely season one. Yeah. It looks like your strength of roster is right around 130, like you said. And, you know, season one, there was no crystal ball. So right. That coupled with the fact that you, it sounds like you were kind of right in the middle between recruiting and development. You know, you kind of put yourself, it's a difficult situation to be in. You're not, you know, putting yourself in the best position to land new talent, but going into season two, you know, just based on the class that you landed, it looks like you had a higher emphasis on recruiting and things like that. And like you mentioned, this class is fantastic. Yeah, I guess, do you want to just tell us a little bit about your recruiting class coming into season three? You know, how did you go about putting the class together? How helpful was the crystal ball in doing so? And then, you know, what needs did you need to fill? Things like that.
Yeah, you know, I think, again, you know, all the credit in the world goes to Eli for things that he's – for creating this in the first place and then you know, kind of rolling out additional little quirks and things like that. So the crystal ball has been fun, and I know you're on the Discord chat, and yep. it's – you know, the way that people are going about trying to figure out how to make the sim work for them and their programs, the crystal ball has been huge, because now it's an added layer of gamesmanship, I think, as far as how you offer kids, how many kids you offer. It's funny that I'm sitting here talking about this like they're real people, but there's a certain level of just more fun, I guess, or even realism, I guess. You know, if you concentrate on one kid, you're more likely to get him. You know, I saw that, I think it was DePaul, that the first recruiting period for this season, they put out something like 19 offers in the first period. I put out one and landed the kid that I really wanted. So my philosophy has been, you know, you're correct. I jacked up my recruiting all the way to a 5. I would say that my program's integrity my program's integrity isn't the highest, but I think you got to play a little bit of the game as well to try to make things happen. As far as the class that I was able to land coming into season 3, it all started, I believe, in the first period of last season, when I had the opportunity to recruit a 5-star kid, I believe he was my only offer in that first period. I wanted to make sure that I got him. And I think he was the number 12 kid in the class, Alfred Dotson. And, you know, for that, you know, when he committed, I thought to myself, this is, you know, I think I may have a pretty firm grasp on how this sim works as far as recruiting goes. And, you know, in the season 2 recruiting period for the season 3 class, it was more about accumulating talent to match the teams that I was playing, on my schedule. You know, ACC, you know, Tristan Freeman, the coach of Pittsburgh, you know, accumulates talent on a massive level. Ian Mum, you know, at North Carolina, just accumulates talent over talent over talent. So for me, it wasn't really addressing certain roster spots. It was just getting the best kids that I could, and I would worry about the entirety of the roster at some point, but I just wanted to get some higher overall ranked guys on the roster so I could actually compete, because the first 2 seasons were dreadful as far as my record goes. I had no shot at postseason play or anything like that. So, just trying to accumulate talent to get on the same level as some of the other guys in my conference has been the focus so far.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm not going to push you too hard on that integrity thing. I don't want, anyone getting ousted for anything that comes out on this podcast. So, I just trust you there that, you know, you're doing everything you can to stay above board, but
that's right.
But, you know, sometimes you got to do whatever it takes. It's interesting. You say, you know, you're focused on just landing, at least for season 2's class coming into season 3, you're focused on just landing, you know, as much talent as you could to compete with, you know, those high profile ACC schools. How have you approached, I guess, this season from a recruiting perspective, just knowing that the talent you did recruit last season, I mean, just going through it, you had 4 guys in the top 100, all 4 of those guys are rated 13.0 or higher. So you landed some really high profile guys. How are you approaching recruiting this year? With that looming possibility that some of these guys could go pro, were you focused more on development because you are hoping to be able to land these guys, or are you still kind of hoping to just kind of keep that wheel turning and bring in new talent every year?
I don't really concern myself with the kids leaving early. I think that once, if you start accumulating wins, if for any reason you're able to increase your prestige as a program, I think you're going to continue to get those high level kids. So, you know, how quickly I cycle through those high level players is kind of up to the sim itself. What I'm doing right now is basically what's worked best for me as far as recruiting is putting out 1 or 2 offers max on each period. And, you know, I was able to land the point guard that I wanted. I got another top 100 kid coming in that I landed in the first cycle. Currently the crystal ball selection for, I believe, a top 30 player going into season 4, which addresses my small forward position, which will be And I don't have one on the season four roster. Jamal Mason, gotcha. Which is a JUCO that I brought in season one, will be moving on. But you know, it's as far as going pro, I mean, if they're good enough to go pro, then hopefully that means that I'm going to the tournament. So, you know, if that's the trade off that I have to go with, then that's the trade off that I'll make.
Definitely, yeah. And I mean, to be fair, looking at your roster, looking at the players you brought in, a lot of these guys, well, especially your new recruits, your top four freshmen, they all have medium to high loyalty, which, as we know, is a significant factor in determining whether these guys go pro. So that's helpful. And the other thing is only one of them is high development. So they might turn out to be just a little less attractive to the pro scouts, just for the fact that they may not be perceived to have the potential that some other talent or some other freshmen would. So I think that's a good approach. And I think that there's a good chance you might be able to bring some of these guys back next year anyway.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I had to guess, I would say that Dotson may be a candidate to go early.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think that, you know, I think I'm in pretty good shape with, you know, Dakota Dodd was, you know, a 13 overall player that, you know, if Dotson does go pro, I don't see a real significant drop off. So, you know, if I can plug Dodd into the shooting guard position, then I feel pretty good about that.
Definitely. Yeah, you got some solid shooting guards on your roster, so I don't think you'll be hurting too bad there if Dotson does go pro. So going into season three, we're in the midst of season three now. Tell me about, you know, your team this year and your team's outlook coming into the season within your conference and then nationally as well.
You know, I last I checked, I think I'm sitting at 3-4. Not, you know, I stacked up a pretty brutal out-of-conference schedule, playing teams like Green Bay, which Eric Haslam has in the top 25. We won't talk about his integrity. you know, it's just, you know, I thought I would be sitting better than I'm currently sitting. I think this is a tournament team, you know, in the three seasons that we've played or currently in the midst of. I thought this was my earliest and best opportunity to actually make some kind of postseason. I was, you know, coming into season three, we were predicted to finish, I believe, sixth in the ACC, according to some metrics that were posted on Discord. So, you know, I was very optimistic. I hope that, you know, as we go into ACC play, we're able to kind of right the ship a little bit. I don't know about how the Sim approaches in-season development as far as kids go, but you know, I've got some kids on the roster that are really, I think Gentry and Dotson are both averaging over 17 points a game. So, you know, I think we can score. I think that possibly, you know, preventing other teams from scoring on the defensive side is something that maybe I have to address through some recruiting and maybe focus on that a little bit more going into season four. But I think right now we're offensively talented enough to make the tournament. And, you know, that's my goal. Just making the tournament is a step forward for this program in comparison to what I inherited when I first took the program over.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Like you said earlier, when you took it over, it was 130th or so in the country in strength of roster. And, I mean, to some, you know, mid-major schools out there, that might sound like a dream. But when you're in the ACC, I mean, I'm just looking at season three's the rankings for some of these teams. You know, you got North Carolina's first in the country in overall roster strength, Duke's third, Louisville's ninth, Pittsburgh's 10th, Virginia's 20th, you're 31st, and then Clemson, Boston College, Miami, Florida, they're all in the top 45 as well. So, I mean, it's just a gauntlet in the ACC. And so, like you said, making the tournament just 3 years into the Sim after where you started would be a huge step forward. But man, it's gotta be brutal just to even make the ACC tournament. The conference is just so stacked at the top, especially.
Yeah, the way that Ian accumulates talent is unlike anything I've really seen. Which I guess is, you know, it's another thing that makes the Sim so realistic. And you know, again, big ups to Eli for making it happen that way. But North Carolina just. And even Louisville. Louisville does an incredible job accumulating talent as well. Those are guys that, you know, that I have to go head-to-head with on the recruiting trail. I think our lists are very similar as far as players we're able to recruit. Right now I'm at 4-6 and I have one of the best rosters, top 40 roster in the nation. So I may have been a little aggressive in my scheduling, but hopefully, that will make my strength of record hasn't been fantastic in the first 2 years, obviously, because we're not accumulating wins. So I thought with a talented roster, I could go after some of the big dogs like Auburn. I'm always going to play Georgia. And then, just like real life, I try to keep it as real as possible. But hopefully as we get into the season, I can play some of these lower level ACC teams and start accumulating some wins and get myself in the tournament.
Yeah. Your schedule, like you said, you're 4-6. Your schedule has been really tough. You faced Florida ranked team, Texas Tech, Green Bay, all ranked teams, and weren't able to grab any wins there. But, in my previous discussions with Fake Joe Lenardi, it does seem like that's the way to approach the non-conference schedule. If you're a team that's hoping to get into the tournament, is to, stack your schedule as much as you can. Hopefully you win some of those games that you stack, but regardless, I think it appears within the sim that the selection committee values, getting those reps against other good teams. They aren't going to punish you too bad for losing some of those games. So I don't think you did anything that I wouldn't have done in terms of scheduling. And then the other thing I want to mention too, like you said, you're 4-6, probably a little bit disappointing considering where your preseason rank was in the country, but you only have one senior on your roster, like you said, that small forward, and you are maybe probably at risk of losing your stud freshman. But aside from that, you have, probably six guys returning that I feel like you should be able to count on. And then, you bring in a couple more solid recruits. I think next year should be another really positive, even stronger team for you next year. So I think that the outlook is good for you next year. But like you said, if you could sneak into the tournament this year, that'd be a huge step forward, kind of leading into a potentially bigger season next year.
Yeah, I think, I'm going to lose the Jamal Mason kid, obviously, as a senior. Yep. I'm probably going to lose the Quinnipiac transfer that I landed in season one, Jack Arnett, at the point guard position, simply because, I was able to sign a top 100 point guard in season three and the first period of this year. And, I'm going to keep chasing talent. So there's a strong likelihood that he's probably going to transfer out after this season. I need to, as I spoke about earlier, looking at the season three guide right now, I'm giving up 69.9 points per game. I'm sorry, I'm scoring 69.9 points per game, but I'm giving up 69.8 points per game. So, an upgrade on the defensive side is something that I really need to look at, and hopefully going into season four, I'm hoping to be a top 25 team and, sweet 16 team somewhere in that range. And I think right now we're trending in the right direction. Right now I'm 268th in the nation in opponents' points per game. So that's not a fantastic number, and that's something that we need to address.
Yeah, definitely. And again, looking at your roster, you're in a great position to address some of those concerns because – the worst three players on your roster all happen to be low loyalty. So, like you said, adding that point guard should enable you to kick off your point guard that's at the bottom of your roster, bringing some fresh, better talent. And then, hopefully that addresses some of your defensive issues going into season four. So, yeah, definitely could be a fun outlook for you, top 25 outlook going into next season.
I have a junior center that's 3.8 on offense. So that maybe also be we're not going to say we're going to force him out, but if I have the opportunity to possibly recruit over him, then that may be an avenue that we have to pursue as well.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a little drop off between your sixth best player and your seventh and eighth. Your sixth best player is 11.9 overall, and then your seventh is 9.6. So I mean, if you can just kind of fill out your roster a little bit more at the bottom there, you should be in really good shape to have a strong season four, no doubt. So then I was curious. You kind of touched on how tough the ACC is, and so you find yourself in the not so enviable position of being a prestige three team in a conference with, you know, three prestige one teams, North Carolina, Duke, Louisville, and then also two prestige two teams, Virginia and then Syracuse, who's having a down year this year, but, you know, prestige two school, they should be back in no time. Basically, everyone else aside from Boston College is a prestige three school. Boston College is a prestige four. So just generally speaking, how have you kind of approached being a prestige three team in a conference that's that stacked? Like, what can you do to, you know, kind of separate yourself from the other prestige three schools, but then also compete with those teams in the higher prestige levels?
I think, you know, geography, I think, certainly plays a part in the ability to recruit. And again, speaks to the realism of the sim. That's not unlike real life. So,
yeah,
Georgia Tech in real life, you know, the real Josh Pastner has to, you know, put up with these situations as well. I mean, recruiting in the Southeast against North Carolina and Georgia, Florida State, and Louisville. It's just something that I think that kind of plays into why I recruit with the philosophy that I do. You know, I can't put out seven or eight offers per period and expect to land kids against a prestige one or prestige two school. I have to put out a single offer and kind of play that crystal ball game for the 3 days that the period is open. So, you know, when I see teams like Michigan State where they land whatever it is, three top 25 guys in a period is absolutely insane. Ian doing the same thing at North Carolina, landing a couple top 15 guys per period. If I can go through the four recruiting periods and land the guy that I want, the one guy that I want in each period, then I'm going to take that as a W and I'll be able to build my roster. Maybe not in a single season, but you see where we are in season three compared to season one, and where I'm going to be in season four compared to, say, season two or season three. So it may take a little bit more time, but once I get there, I plan on staying there.
Yeah. I mean, you don't need to disclose too much if you don't want to, but just in terms of your recruiting focus, you know, you, like you mentioned, you're focused on, you know, landing one guy a cycle if you can. Are you, you know, since you're not recruiting the top level talent that like North Carolina or Louisville are, like you mentioned, is your recruiting focus still as strong as it was in season two, or have you kind of shifted a little bit towards the development side to enable the guys on your roster to improve, to kind of keep up with those schools, or kind of how are you approaching that?
That may be something that I will do once I get the guys on the roster, but I don't think that the development doesn't really help me if I don't have the talent. It's difficult to develop talent that isn't there. So what I did was, you know, I cranked up my recruiting to a five. I went, you know, I sold out basically to try to get, you know, to try to get that talent on the roster. And once I get those kids, you know, on my roster, you know, maybe I'll crank it back down to a three and try to develop those kids and maximize their ceiling. But, you know, like I said before, early on, I kind of went right down the middle as far as being balanced, quote unquote, with everything. And found that wasn't really what worked for me. You know, I had to bring in a couple transfers just to fill some roster spots that I really wasn't really interested in having on my roster. So, you know, I went full bore on recruiting and got put development to the side, because if I can get, you know, if I can land a kid that's a 13 and a half to a 15, then I don't really need to develop him a whole lot more in order for the program to be successful, but I have to end up with those kids on my roster somehow. So
Definitely. It's fun and interesting to hear about, you know, the different hurdles teams like yourself, where you're in just a power conference, but you're, you know, a really solid school, just not that prestige one or two, just kind of hearing how they approach things, just because, you know, I'm at a prestige six school. You know, my issues are, you know, just trying to be the one team that doesn't miss the Atlantic Sun Conference tournament. And then and basically just developing the talent I do have on my roster, because recruiting is a little bit more of a struggle for us. But
sure.
So it's interesting to hear, you know, how you kind of approach just having to face such a daunting conference schedule every year and things like that. So, it's interesting just to see, because like you said, Eli's made this pretty realistic, and so everyone kind of has to approach it in different ways depending on the situation they find themselves in. And so I think you've done obviously a really good job of, you know, developing Georgia Tech to this point. You've gotten up to 31st in the country in just the third season, and it looks like next year should be even better. What are your long-term plans in the sim? It sounds like you said Georgia Tech was the program you wanted to be at. So I'm kind of assuming that's where you're going to stay, but do you have any interest in moving to a team with a higher prestige level? Do you have a different job you want to try out? What's kind of your long-term plans with Georgia Tech or otherwise?
You know, I've been, you know, in real life, I've been a Georgia Tech fan since Stephon Marbury played at the program in 1995. So, you know, I'm a sidewalk GT fan, meaning that I didn't actually attend the school, but I've always been a fan. So for me, when Eli, you know, Eli kind of rolled out a beta before he rolled this out, and he was kind of talking to a group of people that we kind of, you know, stay pretty uptight or pretty close knit and have kind of conversations out of the public view. And he said, you know, can you guys try this out? Maybe take a look at it. Tell me what you think. And at the time I didn't think a whole lot about it. I thought it was just something that he was kind of toying around with. And when he decided to take it live, he gave us the opportunity, a certain few of us to snatch up any team that we may desire, which was awesome of him. Like I said, Eli and I consider Eli a friend. He's been on my podcast a couple times, and you know, we work together on some things. But you know, it was a no brainer for me to take Georgia Tech, given the opportunity. Definitely. As far as aspirations, I don't know. You know, there are a couple jobs. I might take the Duke job just to run them into the ground. certainly if there are certain programs that if they became available, I might take a run at. For whatever reason, I've always kind of had an affinity for UCLA. I think the way that North Carolina seems to dominate the sim, if that job opened up, which I can't imagine that it would, Ian's a kind of a diehard college basketball guy, so I'm sure that he's going to stick with the Tar Heels. I might take them just because it would be fun to be, a top five team that's getting every recruit that you want that wins championships. So would that be more fun than me developing the Georgia Tech program into a perennial contender? I'm not so sure, especially where as I'm a fan and I can kind of do what I want with that program. It's kind of, it's obviously, you know, a fake season playing fake basketball, but it's always, there's a certain satisfaction that you get from taking your favorite program and kind of, you know, developing their ceiling and their abilities in a way that you can completely control. So I think I'm probably at Georgia Tech for the long haul, but you know, there are certain jobs, and if the opportunity came about, then I might jump ship and just to see how the other side lives, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting to hear that perspective too, because I know there are a number of coaches, I guess, that are coaching teams that they, you know, hand selected like yourself, teams that either they went to that school or they, like you said, just grew up liking that team, whatever the case is. But it's interesting because it kind of, your response kind of parallels or mirrors real life, if you will, with, you know, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Steve Alford was a New Mexico alum. Am I right about that? I could be wrong, but I think he was a New Mexico alum, and then he coached there, and then he went to UCLA. Or was he – I might be mixing this up.
Indiana.
Okay. Yeah. You're right. Whatever the case is, I know there are situations where coaches, you know, come from – here's a better example. Greg McDermott, Creighton's head coach, he was Northern Iowa's head coach previously before he was the coach at Iowa State. And he, I'm very confident, attended Northern Iowa. So, you know, he got the opportunity to coach the school that he played for. And then he saw, you know, the opportunity to take a higher profile job. And he did so going to Iowa State. And so it's kind of interesting to, you know, to hear your perspective where you're, you know, you're at the program you wanted to be at initially, but you wouldn't completely close the door on trying something new, trying a different higher profile job.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to drop a big fat sack of money for me to leave Georgia Tech, then, you know, there's a certain ceiling, I think, for you know, certain programs in real life. And obviously, you know, Creighton's ceiling would be higher than, you know, McDermott's previous job. So, you know, it's where, you know, you start, the road starts to split as far as the sim and actual life. You know, if you're going to offer me, you know, double the pay in real life, then obviously you have to do that for the betterment of your family, your situation, your monetary stability. So, but just as far as the sim goes, you know, where it's for fun, obviously no money changes hands, then, I mean, it's more fun for me to try to win at Georgia Tech than it would be to go to Kentucky or whatever and try to win there. It just wouldn't be as satisfying if I was at a different school. So,
yeah, I agree too. And there's something to be said for winning with a program that isn't necessarily expected to win every year. You know, if you're, if you're North Carolina and you win the national championship, I mean, no one's going to be surprised. And in fact, people are going to be more surprised if you're, you know, have a season where you're eliminated in the second round or something like that. That'll be more notable than if you win the whole thing just because of your program's status. But if you're Georgia Tech, I mean, just even an Elite Eight or Final Four run might be more fulfilling than winning the whole thing with North Carolina. So, yeah, I mean, while that goal of, you know, winning the national championship might be you know, appealing or might be the thing that everyone's kind of ultimately hoping for, you know, it means more at different schools than, you know, just those prestige ones.
Yeah, especially since we're in season three now. So in the sim, it's what, 2023? And Georgia Tech hasn't been to the tournament since 2010. So,
trying to break that streak. I didn't realize that. Oh, yeah, I didn't realize it'd been that long.
Last time they were there, I believe, was the Derek Favors season. So,
see, yeah, that's the thing about Georgia Tech. I mean, I don't know. I'm from the Midwest. I live in Kansas City, but I feel like people in my neck of the woods aren't really familiar, or they don't really recognize all the talent that Georgia Tech's been able to produce in terms of, you know, NBA guys. But they've been able to produce NBA talent for, you know, the better part of the last decade and a half, two decades. They just haven't been able to make that push to get to the NCAA tournament. I guess it's the same challenge you're facing with, you know, just the daunting ACC schedule every year and having to battle all those high profile schools.
Yeah. It's difficult when, you know, like Georgia Tech pulls in a Kogi, Ben Lammers, and, you know, Pastner does maybe his best coaching job of his career that season. And they still don't make the tournament. Like that team was fantastic to watch. The way that they played basketball, well, it was a beautiful thing. You know, they only had, you know, 3.5 players that were maybe ACC level players, but the game of basketball that they actually played was, you know, as a Georgia Tech fan, and a program that's been down, maybe not down, but has failed to meet expectations of the fan base. Let's say that. That team was a lot of fun to watch, especially since, you know, Josh Okogie wasn't expected to be the player that he became. He certainly wasn't somebody that you thought was going to be a first round NBA draft pick. And you know, the way that he developed, the way that Eric Reveneau developed Ben Lammers and his game and how they ran the offense through him, was truly remarkable. And like you said, though, you can have a team like that plays really good defense and is really fun to watch, and in the ACC, that still doesn't mean that you're going to make the tournament, which is too bad.
Right. Yeah. And the fun thing about the sim is that, you know, while that rebuilding process with Josh Pastner at real Georgia Tech, it's a grind. It's a slow moving process to turn out, or to turn seasons out into, you know, get the talent on your roster that you want and to ultimately make the NCAA tournament as that first step. In the simulation, you know, these seasons are coming at you basically a month and a half at a time. So you can see that progression take place a lot quicker, and it's a lot, it gives you a lot more hope in terms of, you don't feel like you're going to be at a school for 3 years, like real years before you see any success. You know, it'll just be, you know, month or maybe 2 months away before you get to a place where you're comfortable again.
Yeah, for sure.
So getting outside of, you know, Georgia Tech from a sim perspective, I'm just kind of curious, is there anything else from that you've experienced within the sim that you've liked to see changed or upgraded? Obviously, like we mentioned, Eli's done a fantastic job just with everything he's done in the sim, obviously to put it together in the first place, but then the additions that he's made, like the crystal ball, for example, is a huge addition. Like the ability to potentially jump prestige levels if you warrant it based on the success you have in different seasons. So, and he's in my discussions with him, he's been open about the fact that he's willing to listen to ideas. Doesn't necessarily mean any or all of them will come to fruition, but is there anything you've experienced that you'd like to see changed or upgraded within the simulation itself?
Nothing too drastic. I think Eli, as we've mentioned multiple times, has done a fantastic job with I guess the fine tuning of the sim. I think the crystal ball was a fantastic addition. For season three, he rolled out the ability for teams to actually track individual statistics for the sim players, which is kind of cool. I'm kind of a stats nerd, so that was fun for me. I guess the one thing that I guess I would like to see more is kind of an expanded ability to recruit outside of your region, whether it be in some kind of tab. As far as I given again in real life, the Southeast is a hotbed for basketball talent. So typically, the ability to recruit high level players at Georgia Tech within my region is always fruitful. There's always high level players there. Whether or not I land them is a different story sometimes. But I wouldn't mind. And I know it's easy to say. I'm sure it's more difficult for Eli to do. And I don't envy him because this thing has taken off, I think, beyond anybody's expectations. But if I could, if there was a an international tab or something like that you could start, focusing on, bringing over players from, say, Australia or whatever. Or just the ability to recruit outside of your region. I know that probably creates a lot of coding and a lot more things for Eli to handle and manage. But not to be a dick, but that's his job. So,
Come on,
and I,
man.
and
Yeah,
I,
what?
yeah, no, but I'm just playing if Eli's listening. But there are plenty of people that would help Eli out if you ever needed a hand with something like that. So, for the most part, I have no critiques. I think that it's above and beyond what maybe we all deserve, and I think he's
Oh,
done a
yeah,
fantastic
100%.
job. And whatever he decides and whichever direction he takes the sim in is something that I'll support. And as long as he keeps fine tuning it, and it's still enjoyable for him, then I'm on board. So.
Yeah, definitely. Like you mentioned the addition in season three to the stats. I mentioned on a previous podcast that addition wasn't something that I was super concerned about just because it didn't really add anything in terms of strategy as far as I could tell at that
Sure.
point. But since it's been added, I've been surprised on how much I've just enjoyed kind of, scrolling through how my players have done in different games and stuff. So I think that, and I know a lot of people were asking for that. So I think that was actually a fun add by Eli, in addition to, just like the more subtle things like adding the hometowns, adding the little player pictures and things like that. He's really brought this game to life, and it's been really cool to just see it progress, like you said. So like you said, Eli's done a fantastic job. And yeah, this is definitely more than any of us deserve for a free game. So anyone out there who isn't subscribed to HeatCheck. CBB.com. I would recommend doing that just to support everything he has done for this
And
game for everyone to enjoy.
you get, I mean, you get, he has a fantastic stable of writers as well. So,
He does, yeah.
it's not just an empty subscription just to support Eli and the Sim, but you get your money's worth with guys like that, with Blake and Brian and Connor and Lucas. So, I mean, those are all really talented guys that really have the ability to write and put out good content.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely not just for the heat check content that you get. You get a lot of real world basketball content as well. So it's well worth it, in my opinion. I also wanted to just touch on your idea for the international recruiting. I hadn't thought of that before, but I just at least on my first thoughts on that idea, I really like it because, with international recruits, it's tough because they're obviously not. you know, in one region or another. They're not in the Southeast region, even though you might still have access to recruit a few of them. And so I could see the appeal, like you said, of having maybe like separate them out altogether. And maybe it's even like another offseason budget slider that you have to choose between focusing sure. on players within your region or focusing on international players and budgeting it that way. Because I mean, you do see schools like Gonzaga. I know I'm a Creighton fan, so I follow Creighton really closely. Creighton's done a lot more too in terms of going overseas and recruiting sure. those guys and bringing those guys in. So I think it would add a little bit of an element to, you know, a little bit more strategy, because you don't know exactly what the talent level is going to be for the overseas players in a given year. But just to have that option would be kind of fun. Like you said, I'm sure it's not an easy thing to just put out by Eli, but that's a new idea I hadn't heard before, and I think it would be a fun way to look at it.
That's actually really interesting that you kind of say that with the sliders. That may be kind of an easier way to do it, is if you have a 1-5 slider as far as whether or not you want to recruit locally, regionally, nationwide, worldwide. If that was something that maybe could be a little bit more easily incorporated into the sim, then that may expand your recruiting base. It may also, you know, if you go worldwide and your focus is worldwide as far as recruiting, that may make your ability to pull in multiple recruits less likely. But, you know, as far as maybe if you were focused regionally, say the Southeast, that may right. increase your chances of actually of landing your top recruits. So, yeah, I hadn't thought of that either.
I think we're definitely onto something. So I'll go ahead and we'll just book it. Eli, we'll make sure Eli gets that. But no. I do think it'd be an interesting ad. It'd be fun. A fun little additional strategy point. I'm, like I've said before, I'm all for the different adding as many different strategy elements to the game as possible. Just makes it more fun for especially the programs that are not at the top of the national rankings and things like that to kind of, you know, maneuver and try to work their way up in the polls and everything like that. So, thanks for coming on. This has been really fun. At this point, I kind of want to give you the opportunity to, you know, share your Twitter handle for anyone listening that wants a good Heat Check universe follow, and then any information about anything else that you want to plug related to Heat Check or unrelated to Heat Check.
You can follow Posh Jasner at Sim Posh Jasner on Twitter. Also, for those of you who don't know, that's an ode to the real Georgia Tech's Josh Pastner. I, of course, am Michael Hunter. I own and operate ACC Basketball Report, and I have a podcast called the ACC Basketball Report that I do with the Chimp Carey alter ego that you may know from Twitter as well. So, it's a little bit slow in the offseason, but I'm really looking forward to the season picking up. Talk some ACC basketball. Visit ACC Basketball Report for all kinds of opinions as far as who the players I like, the teams that I like, my preseason rankings and things of that nature. So I really appreciate you having me on. I had a really good time, and I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Yeah, definitely recommend giving him a follow, both on the Heat Check side and otherwise. He's a really entertaining Heat Check follow. He's a lot of back and forth with a lot of other coaches and a lot of smack talk going on. So definitely a fun follow if you're not already following him on the Heat Check side. And then, yeah, definitely would recommend checking out his ACC podcast and his ACC report site. Thank you for coming on. This was a blast. Hopefully I can have you on again sometime in the future, and good luck to you in the future with Georgia Tech.
All right, man. Thank you.
No problem. Before we close, I wanted to provide an update on what's coming up within the Heat Check Sim universe within the next week. So on Sunday night at midnight Eastern time, September 27th, recruiting cycle 2 will be complete, and we will learn the results of the final non-conference matchups. On Wednesday, September 30th, the first conference game results will be released, and on Friday, October 2nd, the second round of conference game results will be released, and recruiting cycle 3 will be open. As a reminder, you can find me on Twitter at HCSimShow. Please feel free to send in comments and questions, and I will do my best to incorporate my responses into future episodes. Thanks for listening, and I'm looking forward to bringing you another episode of the Heat Check Sim Show next week. Sim you later.